This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
Hey, Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Calvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Game over! Knowles are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples, joined today by Trey McGahee, that is Wayne McGahee III. We're going to be talking about the latest news on the Florida State side, primarily today, the announcement of Everett Golson to that he's going to do what all of us already pretty much knew he was going to do, but he finally made it official, that Everett Golson, the former starting quarterback for Notre Dame, is now going to be at Florida State as a graduate transfer in 2015. So that immediately brings some much-needed talent and depth to a position that really didn't look that good in the spring. So I for one am very bullish about this move. I think it's a win-win for both sides.
Oh, I definitely agree that it's a win for both sides. You know, Golson gets to come in and learn from a guy who's put three straight first-round quarterbacks into the league. There isn't any other coach in college football that can say that. So he gets to come learn for 1 year under Jimbo, try to improve his draft stock, and you know, it does nothing but help Florida State. I mean, even if he does not win the job, competition breeds growth. Sean McGuire took every single rep as the first team quarterback this spring. No one challenged him.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the thing with McGuire is that it didn't help him.
he needed that challenge.
Yeah, he needed to be challenged. He needs somebody to come in and force him to be better than he was in the spring. And, you know, we did not get glowing reports. I mean, obviously, you know, we can only be at the first part of any practice. So you don't see much in those other, and then, you know, we see what we see in the spring game. But, you know, you do get reports that leak out from practice, and we didn't get glowing reviews of where McGuire stood through most of the spring. You know, I know I didn't, and competition is bound to help that, whether Golson wins the job or not. And Fisher has made it clear he did not promise Golson anything.
Absolutely. Jimbo wouldn't promise Tom Brady the job if he walked through the door. That's just who Jimbo is. You're going to have to come in and earn it.
Yeah, well,
and,
Jimbo, you know, would need to promise Tom Brady the job because he knows
exactly,
I'm going to give you a fair shake. And odds are you're Tom Brady. You're probably going to win the job.
That's a definite case. But it also says something about Everett Golson that he's willing to come in and work and not, you know, not being named the starter from, you know, coming like from right now, he's not named the starter. It says a lot about him that he wants to come in and beat McGuire out for the job.
Yeah, it says he probably watched the FSU spring game, to be honest.
Probably. That first throw was awful.
Yeah, I think, and honestly, who knows how this conversation went, but can you imagine this conversation between Jimbo, who's seen what Golson can do firsthand? I mean, Golson was, if I remember right, 31 of 52 against Florida State in Doak Campbell, for Notre Dame, and, you know, dang near beat Florida State. So, you know, he knows what Golson is capable of in that case. You know, he's seen plenty of them. You know, he watched
fourth
the film.
Fourth and 18.
Right. He's yeah, exactly. A fourth and 18 that, you know, they get on a clutch drive. You know, he's seen the national championship game against Alabama. So he kind of sees what his ceiling is. And then he, you know, obviously, he's seen what other options are on the roster, but you can only imagine that, like, okay, you've got this meeting between Golson and Fisher when they're doing what Jimbo was talking about as negotiating in the early process, which, you know, I don't like that term for that anyway, but can you imagine,
have you watched this film? Do you see what we have?
Yeah, exactly. So I can only imagine that Fisher basically just said, well, you know, I won't promise you anything. I will give you, you know, a fair shake. You're going to have the same opportunity everybody else is going to have. Now, in keep that in mind, and I just want you to watch these three series from the spring game, just so that you can see what we have and where you would fit in the competition. Like I said, I'm not going to guarantee you anything, but here we go. And you can just see Golson going and kind of nodding and going, okay, yeah, I got that.
I mean, he brings a lot to the table. I mean, we've seen what Sean can do. We've seen what Golson can do. You know, if you're a fan of college football, you watched him get absolutely obliterated by Alabama. And then if you're a fan of Florida State, you watched him almost single-handedly beat Florida State last year in Tallahassee.
Yeah,
so
he had his way with FSU on defense.
Oh, absolutely. But then again, there was a lot of people that did.
Yeah, well, it's what happens when you have a lazy and entitled group of very talented players on defense. But anyway, the thing for me is that Golson does bring a lot of skills to the table. I mean, you're seeing some comparisons out there on social media to Russell Wilson, which I think is unfair to him. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Wilson is a rare guy. I mean, I thought in college Wilson was one of the best best quarterbacks that I had seen in a while at that time, and really felt he was something special at that point. Now, I like Golson a lot, but like I said, I just the comparison to Wilson is just a little bit too much. I understand what people are getting at, that he's undersized, he's got a big arm, he's got the ability to make plays with his feet and throw on the run and all of those things. You know, but that doesn't make you Russell Wilson. Just like, you know, I thought it was ridiculous for people to compare Mariota to Wilson during the process, because, you know, he lacks the anticipation and the charisma and he's more robotic and stiff than what you get with Wilson, who plays really loose, really intuitive, fluid football. And I just never got
Russell Wilson sees the game. Like, he can watch the game unfold before it happens. That's what makes him so great.
Right, and you can see that at NC State. You could see that at Wisconsin. I mean, the guy was just ahead of everything. And I think
you can see it. Sorry, you can see it as NC State, as Florida State fans were pulling their hair out.
Yeah, let's stop talking about those at the moment. these are supposed to be happy times. Happy times. But no, I mean, that I think is a little bit unfair, but you know, some of the comparisons aren't too bad. I actually think that the guy that Golson probably most closely compares to in recent years is actually Blake Sims from Alabama. Sims, again, a little bit undersized as a NFL prospect at quarterback, you know, not a tall guy, a little bit taller than Golson, maybe not quite as strong an arm as Golson. And, you know, I think Golson's got a little bit more arm talent and hand talent than what Sims had. But I think by and large, that's what you're getting. I think you're getting someone in that area of a Blake Sims, which, you know, Blake Sims was good enough last year that Alabama was a one-loss team going into the playoff in the SEC West. So, you know, if you're Florida State and you've got the current roster of Sean McGuire, J.J. Cosentino, and, you know, the freshman, and of course, you know, you can't forget John Franklin, who will have some role, although probably less now at that position with Golson on the roster, because Golson can do what he can with his feet. But, you know, if you've got that, you know, do you take last year's Blake Sims on this Florida State roster?
Of course. I mean, he's honestly, Blake Sims would be, I mean, he'd be very good at Florida State. He'd be very good anywhere right now. I mean, he was a good college quarterback. That's what he was.
Right. And I think, you know, I think he's basically what you're looking at with Everett Golson is someone with a similar kind of skill set to what you have from Blake Sims, with a little bit more overall upside, more talent, more ceiling as a passer. You know, Sims is a little bit more limited as a passer. The thing with Golson is that he can really spin the pill. You know, he can really throw the football when his footwork is good, when he's, you know, really focused and doing things right. You know, you could see, you know, as a freshman, the talent really jumped off at you in terms of Golson, you know, the intuitiveness and some of these things that you want to see from a young quarterback. And then he went and worked with George Whitfield for the year that he had off for the academic issues that he had at Notre Dame, and came back looking like a guy who'd worked with George Whitfield. So you can only guess that Jimbo Fisher will keep him from working with Whitfield over the summer. You know, obviously they're going to want him in Tallahassee for the summer, because he's got to learn quite a bit. He's got to get some rapport and chemistry built with receivers and all of that. And that's not going to be done if he's working with Whitfield. But, you know, with the summer not working with Whitfield, you know, the guy could actually revert back to pre-Whitfield form, which was a good bit better in a lot of respects than what we saw last year.
I'm wondering, you know, just going on a different side of things, I'm wondering how he responds to Jimbo being his coach. Because Kelly, through the latter half of the season, threw him under the bus every chance he got.
Yeah,
every chance he got.
And that's one thing, Jimbo is really hard on his quarterbacks, but he never throws them under the bus.
Never. Jimbo will defend his quarterbacks till the day he dies. That's what he does. I mean, you look at it during the spring. He defended Sean McGuire after the spring game.
Yeah, and what he'll emphasize is, well, you know, this is a team game. Yeah, you know, the quarterback made some mistakes here and there, but, you know, those aren't all on him because, you know, the protection's got to be there. You know, when the guys around you aren't doing the right things, you know, that receiver was off by a yard on his route, and that's not on the quarterback. You know, he's going to find ways to make sure to keep his quarterback aware that he has his back. Now, when they get into film session, it's not going to be like that.
Oh, he's going to light him up. But the thing is that he's not going to publicly embarrass him like Kelly does. And I guarantee you that Golson knows that.
Yeah. And the other thing for me, you know, you see a lot of people talk about Golson's turnovers last year. You know, he had 14 fumbles, 8 of them lost. He threw, 20, he had 22 total turnovers. So I guess that's 16 interceptions. 14 interceptions with eight lost fumbles. So 14 interceptions, 8 lost fumbles, a lot of turnovers there. And all of those, the thing that was really striking is that all of those were in the second half of the year. He went turnover free up until the North Carolina game. And then, you know, finally, then there was that rash of turnovers where, you know, he was on pace for 40 turnovers in a year if you look at the second half of the year. But if you look at his freshman year and the first half of last year, he didn't turn it over much. And actually, the ESPN folks, not the ESPN folks. I think this was there's another scouting service. They chart quarterbacks' bad decision rate. His bad decision rate in 2012 was 1.8, which is elite. Anything under 3% is generally pretty good for a quarterback. 1.8 bad decision rate is very, very good. So he's shown in the past that he's capable of protecting the football. And that he's capable of making good decisions with the football. What gets me though is when you start looking at when you start looking at Kelly's history with quarterbacks. Remember what Tommy Reese used to get made fun of so much for? What was it? What was it again?
Just turnovers every time. Like all of his quarterbacks do it. It's a system.
Yeah. So you got to wonder, you know, at some point, and when I was going back through the film, there were a number of throws that I was looking at and I'm going, that's by design. He's going to have to squeeze that window. You know, the other thing is that Fisher will protect him by asking him to do what he does well. That's one thing that Fisher does extremely well as an offensive coordinator and as a quarterback coach is, and you know, people obviously criticize Fisher for having a complex and complicated offense, and it's not as complex and complicated as people think, although it is one of the more complex offenses in college football. And, you know, he puts a lot on the quarterback. I mean, Fisher's view, he talks about this at coaching clinics, is a lot of teams ask all their players to know a lot, and, you know, they have less complicated overall offenses than, you know, than we might, but a lot of teams ask all their players to learn lots of stuff. He said, we do it differently. I ask one guy to know everything. And so the quarterback, there's a lot on him. But at the same point, Fisher is very careful to figure out what his quarterbacks do well, what they're comfortable with, what throws do they like to make, what plays do they like to run, and then he runs the heck out of them. I mean, you go back to how many times Florida State ran Houston over the last 4 years because both EJ Manuel and Jameis Winston love that play. It was one of the things they're most comfortable with. I mean, you go back to the 2012 game against Clemson. They called Houston 8 times in the second half. Went 8 for 8 for what, 2 scores, I think, out of those calls. So this is what they do. He finds the first step that he makes when he's coming into game planning for the script for the week is he asks his quarterback to write down what have you seen, what have you repped this week that you want to do? What do you want to start with? And that's where they go. That's where they start from. So that's not my impression from Kelly. Kelly seems to be much more top down in that regard. Fisher will climb all over guys, but he's not going to be a dictator in that respect with his quarterbacks, where he's going to demand that they do what he wants them to do. In this case, he wants them to do what they're really comfortable doing. And I think that's going to be a really, really big difference for Golson this year.
I absolutely agree with everything you're saying right there. And it also, you know, just we're talking about it. Dirk Cutter, the new offensive coordinator exactly. of the Tampa Bay Bucks, said Jameis Winston was the most prepared rookie quarterback he's ever seen come out of college. So maybe it's, you know, just a little, hey, good job, Jimbo.
Well, yeah, I mean, no doubt. Well, Cutter also said that he will be measuring every future quarterback he interviews by Winston. He said that Winston's interview, where they, you know, threw all sorts of stuff at him and all this, and then asked him to regurgitate it a little over an hour later, after, you know, getting him off track and going and having a meal and all this other stuff. And Winston remembered everything and then built on what they asked. He said, from now on, I'm always going to measure everyone by Jameis. Which anybody who's, you know, all of us who've covered Florida State the last couple of years are nodding going, uh-huh, welcome to what we've seen the last couple of years.
And what you'll never see again.
Right. I mean, that's a rare guy. But I do think with Golson, there, what I've seen on tape is, you know, when his footwork is good, he's very good. Actually, last year, you know, the guy that played the first part of last year, who was, you know, more comfortable, it was before the turnover bug bit, and seemed to be, you know, pushing the right buttons, looked like he was under control, his footwork was good. That guy, early in the year, I thought was a better passer in terms of showing anticipation, in terms of certain aspects of location and all of that. And this is crazy, but better than this year's number two pick as a passer last year at the first part of the year. And then the second part of the year, he obviously fell off a cliff. But the first part of the year,
he was mentioned as a Heisman candidate.
He was, and he should have been, because the tape showed it. So you're looking at that difference between the players that you've got. Now, the second part, the guy that played the second part of the year for Notre Dame, who looked like one of those broken down Kelly quarterbacks, that guy's not going to win the job. McGuire will win the job over that guy, but I don't think Florida State's going to get that guy. I think they're going to get someone somewhere between that and what we saw at the beginning of last year, and, you know, in the Florida State game. I think asking him to operate on the level that he did against Florida State in every game next year is unrealistic. But I don't see – I think it's very unlikely that he doesn't win this job.
I mean, we'll see. I don't – like you said, we don't know which Golson we're going to get. Honestly, I don't think that McGuire has the same tools that Golson does. But, you know, it all depends on how fast he learns the offense. Jimbo will make it and tailor it around him, but unless Golson's willing to work, he's not going to win the job.
Yeah,
so
but, the word is that he's always been willing to work. So I mean that's, you know, something that does say something in his favor, is that he has that rep. But the other thing too is, if you looked at the response of the Florida State players on Twitter, I think it's obvious that this is not going to be a negative in the locker room. They're ready to receive this guy with open arms, and especially guys on defense who played against him last year. They're really happy to have him. I mean, they saw what he's capable of, and it's pretty clear that they believe that he's more capable of leading this team than what they saw this spring. And that leadership thing is another aspect that, you know, people are going to bring up here, of whether or not he's capable of leading a team that he wasn't with before. But, you know, honestly, the things that we've heard in terms of McGuire in that role, I'm not sure that him coming in is going to really be a negative in that sense. I think, you know, these players are going to be willing to give him a chance to be a leader.
Well, I mean, just look at Jalen Ramsey and how excited he was on Twitter.
I think Jalen was actually crying tears of joy.
I mean, honestly, that was a bad, bad sign for McGuire at that point. you don't want to take too much from something like that, but that was an open show of support for a new guy over your quarterback, and there's no way to take it any other way.
Yeah, like it's hard not to take it that way, and you've got to think that McGuire will have taken it that way. But you know, we know that he's a competitive guy, and that he'll take this very seriously, and that he's not going to just roll over. And again, that's good for Florida State. I actually, you know, again, I think that, you know, you give the median Golson to Florida State for next year, I think he makes Florida State a little more than half a win share better for next year. So that takes them from projecting at, you know, at 9.5 win shares or so to like 10.2, somewhere in there, which gives them a good shot at the ACC title, at another ACC title, gives them a chance to, you know, do more than that if certain other holes get filled. And we obviously know that there are a lot of other holes that need to get filled. You know, the center position is still not fixed. Hegarty right now looks like he's probably going to go to Oregon instead of Florida State, but it's still a possibility that he winds up going to Florida State. If he comes to Florida State, I think that boosts another, you know, quarter win share, something like that. But overall, I think you're looking at, you know, at that 10.2 wins or so in win shares, which then gives you that chance if the center position gets cleared up. You know, let's say Eberle cleans up the snaps a little bit, and you know, he's blocked well at that position and has shown that he can do that. If he can clean up the snaps a little bit and get reliable at the center position, maybe, you know, you get some health at the linebacker position. Maybe you get some good play there from some of the younger guys. Who knows? But there are a lot of holes here still, and you know, we were talking off air before we started about what they're going to need to do with Matthew Thomas having had that shoulder surgery and likely to miss the first few games of this year. You know, he's out 3 to 4 months, and that's from the surgery. That's not 3 to 4 months of the season. But you know, he's not going to be right going into camp. So you're looking at somebody else trying to take that role early on. You know, ideally you've got Lorenzo Phillips, who shows that he can come in and play on the inside, but we don't know if he can. You know, you've got to have somebody step in. Maybe Purifoy is finally healthy. Who knows? Tyrell Lyons looked good at times. Hoskins looked good at times in the spring. But, you know, they're not the level that you would expect at Florida State at this point at that position. You got to wonder what they're going to do at that spot. And I still think that you're going to wind up seeing a lot of Nate Andrews at that money position, which basically boils down to putting him at the will linebacker and running what's, you know, it's a smaller personnel set with an extra defensive back at the linebacker position. But if you know that that's where you're going, you might ask him to add 5 or 10 pounds going into the year, saying, you know, buddy, take one for the team. We're going to need you to play linebacker early. And then, you know, once Matthew gets back, maybe we can start bumping you back again. But, you know, I think he's better at that spot anyway. So you got to wonder whether or not that sort of thing is starting to happen now in the discussions for Florida State. Among the coaching staff, whether or not they're going to ask a guy like Andrews to do that. I think that's more possible. I think you are a little more skeptical about that.
I am. I don't think that Nate, I honestly don't think Nate can play linebacker right now. We were discussing it earlier. Coming into the spring, he did not play a single snap, and there were only two linebackers. And one of them was a converted safety already. There were only two linebackers total for, what, 3 of the 4 weeks of the spring? And Nate Andrews didn't play a single down there.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected him to in the spring, though, just because of the banging that the linebackers take. And, you know, the staff feels that he's pretty important as a contributor back there. I don't know that you want to do that for spring. It's just not... You know, this staff is very pragmatic about how they handle the spring. They're more willing to experiment with guys and give younger guys, you know, you see the younger guys getting a lot more reps in the spring because they look at this as, why should we get our vets who already have a lot of reps under their belt, already have all that, why should we give them more reps so that they possibly get hurt, particularly in the box for a guy like Andrews? I think we're more likely to see that move made in the fall. Where, you know, he's already got a ton of experience playing the linebacker position, which is what the money role is you're stepping into the will linebacker position. It's just, you know, they call that the money position so that it, isn't personnel specific. So, you know, that's basically what you're doing. He's played that position a bunch. He already knows it inside and out. He didn't need that experience in the spring. Now, Lyons and Hoskins did. They hadn't played there really. So those guys did.
That's very true. But the thing is that they got every single rep. Like Jimbo, you know, with the, you know, GPS technology allows some of his guys to take a day off, you know, every now and again, just because of how banged up they get. And you mentioned not wanting to get Nate Andrews banged up like that. The problem is that those guys had to run every single play with the first team. They never got a day off. They didn't get any time off at all.
Yeah, but if you look at who gets the days off generally, it's generally vets. And those guys are not vets. Those guys are battling for playing time. They're young. That's what I would expect. I would expect Andrews to get, you know, fewer reps in the spring, particularly to get a day off here and there, because he's a guy, this is going to be his third year as a de facto starter.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but let's just talk about taking a single playoff, because they couldn't. They could not put – there's nobody else for them to put in during practice. There's nobody else. I mean, if you go from Lyons and Hoskins to walk-ons, because there's no one else.
Yeah, but there was no reason to take Andrews from the safety spot where he was, and especially once Hunter went wasn't playing as much, and you had some of the other injury casualties. There's no reason to take him from the safety spot where you're not really developing a bunch of other guys. I mean, they already had the guy that they're developing, and that being Derwin James. They already have him on the field, so there's nobody else that you're really making room for. With those two linebackers, you want them taking every snap that they can get, because you're going to probably need them. So, you know, I understand the mentality there. I just expect to see Andrews get a little bit more time, potentially at that money spot in the fall. Whether that means he's actually de facto starter at linebacker, I doubt we'll see that. But I would probably, if I were Kelly and the defensive staff, I would really seriously consider asking him to put on a little weight to move up there a little bit more in the fall, knowing that I've got Derwin James in the back end anyway, and he's going to be special at that spot. You just make some room for him anyway. So, you know, we'll see how it ends up going. But final thing we should really talk about, actually, here in the last couple minutes, is what to expect from Florida State coming into the ACC baseball tournament, which begins. We're recording the night before, but it begins today with Florida State at 11 o'clock a.m. So, what do you actually see happening here in the ACC tournament? What does Florida State need to do?
They need to win it. They have to win it if they want a national seed. They dropped three games to Clemson this past weekend. They've lost five straight. They have to win this in order to get a national seed back. Miami, the team that they took two of three from, the last good series that they had, has won 10 straight and has absolutely been obliterating people and taking their spot. They last Sunday, they beat Georgia Tech 22-1. That's a good team. So the problem is that Florida State does not have a bullpen. There's no good arm in the bullpen beside Billy Strode, and he's the closer, and Martin refuses to use him outside of that role. So the thing is, you have to have the starters go deep, and right now the starters are not going deep. They're being hit hard. Boomer Bogalski, he's had a couple very good outings. He's given up four runs in the last two, though, so it's kind of iffy there. You have Compton, who's, you know, he's your senior, he's the go-to guy, he's been giving up a lot of runs. And then you have Drew Carlton, who's Mike Martin pulls after three and a quarter innings.
Yeah, there's been some bizarre handling of some of the arms the last few weeks, you know, giving guys experience, and it's like, what are you trying to give him experience for next year? I mean, anyway.
Yeah, it really has, and you can see some of the frustration in my writing when I'm writing gamers, because I don't understand a lot of the things that are going on and why they are happening and why you're giving Kobe Johnson, you know, a chance to pitch when you're up three runs against the number three team in the country at their house to take the series, which would have locked up a national seed, but you're giving a guy who has a 9 ERA a chance to pitch.
Yeah, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But either way, I will be there tomorrow covering that game, or well, today, for those of you who are listening to this on the day that it releases. Either way, there's a lot of good things to look for from Everett Golson, I think, coming in. We'll have a little bit more to talk about, lots more to talk about over the course of the summer as we address what to expect from this team in general. But I think, you know, the addition of Golson is going to make things a lot more interesting for Florida State fans as this rebuilding season becomes more of a, potentially a little bit more possibility to be a contender. I mean, it raises the ceiling and lowers the floor of this season for sure. At any rate, on behalf of Wayne McGahee III and the rest of the Noll Digest crew, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Please rate us on iTunes. Tell a friend. Thanks for listening. I made this.